Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com. A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
This is Carol Ray, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
So thank you, Carol Ray, for introducing the women's singles final tennis podcast from the US Open in 2019. Carol is one of our Kickstarter backers for the year. We'll be launching our Kickstarter crowdfunding campaign to help us fund the 2020 season in December, on December the 1st. So thanks for everybody who's backed us for this year. It's the reason we're still going, doing nearly 100 shows over the course of the year, and we'll go well beyond that. We've sent Matt Roberts to the Australian Open. We've been able to give him a job. And next year, Catherine, we want him here.
Boy, do we.
Boy, yeah. Do we. You join us in the food court here at Flushing Meadows at the moment, just trying to take in what we've just witnessed from Bianca Andreescu, quite honestly, because her performance was just quite extraordinary. It's led to Catherine and myself drinking pink drinks. I'm no longer at two beers law. I'm one, what's it called?
Frosé.
One Frosé law.
It's taken you 46 years?
Yeah.
It's David's birthday, folks. It's taken you 46 years to discover Frosé.
Yeah, Catherine's bought me a Frosé, and I'm slightly swaying in my seat, I have to say. I'm about two-thirds of the way through it.
It's a magical combination of rosé wine, vodka, and whatever chemical makes it frozen at room temperature.
It's very nice. And I feel like I need it to just try to settle myself down after witnessing a quite stunning final. I mean, it was two sets in the end. It was really exciting to about 3-all, the players going toe-to-toe, and then Andreescu just took off, didn't she? She won about, I think, 8 out of the next 9 games, 7 out of the next 8, something like that, to go up 6-3, 5-1 against Serena Williams. And she had championship point in that game. It looked over. She didn't take the championship point, and then Williams began to play. In that game, her best tennis of the match, she started to play like Serena.
Yes, on championship point at 5-1 down, Serena hit a forehand winner, and that was her first winner of the set.
Was it?
And then she proceeded to win 16 of the next 20 points to get back to 5-all.
Crikey, that's stunning.
And I don't know about you, but at that point I was thinking, thank God Bianca Andreescu is human.
Yes, you're right.
Because I was starting to wonder if she actually would feel any nerves or tension. I really was questioning whether she would.
How much of that comeback do you put down to nerves and tension? Because I'm sure it's a factor, but Serena did start to really connect, didn't she, at that point?
Because the nerves and tension for her were alleviated somewhat,
yes,
because she had nothing to lose at that stage. So I put that reversal in of momentum down entirely to pressure and tension on both sides of the net. It increasing for Andreescu to a point which she'd obviously never experienced before, and it lifting from Serena a little bit. And yet there was, I don't know about you, I never really thought Andreescu wasn't going to win it, because she was so the superior tennis player.
Yeah, I think in my gut I felt that. But I commentated on the second set, and I mean, I always find it, I've told you this before, I find it quite hard to judge a set of tennis that I'm commentating on for the radio. I mean, we're in the back row, we're looking down, I've got no other point of reference than my two people that I'm sitting alongside, which were Jeff Durango and Naomi Brody, and they gave great analysis, but I get a bit lightheaded because you're putting so much emotion into it yourself in order to try to help capture what you're seeing, especially in a set like that, which goes from 5-1 to 5-all, and it's a grand slam. It's either the 24th for one woman or the first for another. I mean, there's no way that it can not be a quite emotional experience for everybody involved. But I felt in my gut that Andreescu would win, and yet seeing Serena come back at her, seeing the crowd go with her, just the logical part of my brain started thinking, well, how can any human withstand this? And I was worried a bit for Andreescu, because I'm always sort of slightly worried about the consequences of her not winning from there. What if she'd have not won from 6-3, 5-1 championship point?
I honestly think 95% of players in that position, having been ped back to 5-all from 5-1 championship point, would have lost that set 7-5 or 7-6 and lost the third set 6-1. I think if it weren't Bianca Andreescu, that would have been the most likely scenario at that point.
Right.
Honestly, the will of Serena Williams, the desire, the competitive instincts would have overwhelmed anybody else. But Bianca Andreescu is special.
She is made of something else, isn't she? I can't think of many players that I've ever seen quite carry herself quite like she does, and seem to have the mental approach that she seems to have. I haven't seen anything in this era of a new player like her.
Is it this visualization business?
Could be. I mean, it's
is it,
I'm sure
should
it's
I be visualizing
it.
A nap?
Yeah, what am I going to visualise?
Visualise the nap and a cheese board, and thus it will be so.
I'm going to start visualising victory over Solihull Simon easily.
Because, yeah, why aren't we all doing it?
I mean,
that's what's going to happen.
Well, particularly because she's so on the money with it. I mean, the thing, what gets me is how candid she is about her visualisation. It's not like she sort of says, yes, I do visualisation, but I'm not going into any details. She gives you specifics.
The specifics being that when she won the Orange Bowl as a 16-year-old, what, a full 3 years ago, she said she visualised herself with the US Open winner's check.
Yeah.
Brackets, $3.85 million.
Crikey. I wouldn't mind visualising that. I am visualising it. It's amazing. I'm really enjoying it. Oh, it's over.
Give it 3 years, David. It'll be yours. That's how it works, apparently.
Yeah.
Happy birthday.
Well, to be honest, I'm quite... given the price of these drinks, $17 a go, I could do it a nice big check. No, look, it's just the way she carries herself. And when it got to 5-all, I mean, the scoreboard can play tricks as well, can't it, on players' minds? Because talking to Jeff and Naomi in our studio, the moment it went 5-all, they said, right, this is now different for Serena Williams. She's no longer swinging from behind, nothing to lose. Now she's suddenly got something to lose. Now the crowd are in there believing. They're not just sort of last stand hoping. They are believing now that this is turning. And so I think that did make a difference. But the bigger point was what Andreescu did. She just stood up and said, come on then, let's have it. And she went out there and she just won the match. She won the match. I mean, okay, there were double faults from Serena. I understand that. I think there were two aces and two double faults to get to 30-all. But it was the way that when she had the third of the match points, went the one she finished it on, when she just smacked that forehand winner away on a clean return. There was just single-minded focus. You're not having a rally here. You're not taking charge of this rally here. I'm going to win it. And she won it. My goodness. That was one of the great finishing points of a match that I've ever seen on a Grand Slam title stage.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that. I don't know about you, but I found her speech and sort of reaction and stuff a little bit disappointing. Well, certainly her speech, maybe not her reaction. She had that moment when she was flat out on her back, but I don't know whether there was a touch of the Andy Murray 2012 sort of total disbelief about it.
I think there was definitely an element.
Because look, she almost seemed a bit
before.
Flat.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think... I do also feel that when people achieve great things sometimes, it can be almost a little bit, right, I've done it. How's it supposed to feel? I don't really feel anything.
This isn't how I visualised it.
Yeah. But I would imagine, I genuinely think she was in shock. Listening to the interview that Prime did with her straight afterwards, the way she reacted to the scenario of being presented as the US Open champion and whether she could have ever believed this was possible, etc. You know, you could see in her eyes that whilst she feels this is perfectly doable and perfectly within her ability, the idea that she's actually gone and done it is still takes a heck of a lot of getting used to, particularly given who was down the other end.
Yeah, and I wonder if that surprised her, feeling, or, you know, once she's had time to process it, that reaction will surprise her, because what did she say? She was asked whether she was surprised to be in the final, and she said, look, if you'd asked me a year ago whether I'd be surprised to be in the US Open final, I'd have said, hell yeah. If you'd asked me 2 weeks ago, no, wouldn't have been surprised.
Yeah.
So maybe, you know, she went in believing she could win it, therefore, you know, logically, if I win it, I won't be surprised or in shock. I'll be, you know, fully able to, maybe her lack of shock, no, maybe her shock shocked her.
Yeah.
No,
I know what you mean. What I really enjoyed about the match was the tactical approach, because a player like Andreescu has so many options. She could have tried a few different things in that match, and early on she hit that drop shot, and Serena came in, read it, got there, drilled the ball straight at the belly button of Andreescu, who managed to just scoop it back up into the air, at which Serena then hit a drive double-handed volley straight back at her again. So she basically tried to drill her twice, which is seriously intimidating, I think, for most players. Perfectly legitimate, but the crowd loved that. They loved that sort of one-on-one, toe-to-toe kind of aggro of it all, and Williams finished it with a come on, you know, the whole thing. And it would have been very easy for Andreescu to be intimidated by that. I loved the way that she was hitting her own winners and coming back with her own come on, you know, in a completely silent stadium when she was hitting her winners. She wasn't in the slightest inhibited by anything that was going on out there. But I noticed the way, apart from right at the end of the match, she basically stopped hitting drop shots altogether. That was the one she hit until late in the match.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, and I think a lot of people were expecting it to be quite a drop shot heavy match,
yeah.
You know.
Or a slice.
All the narrative
there was none
is
of
try
that.
And expose the movement of Serena.
She went toe-to-toe.
Yeah.
She went toe-to-toe with the what we have always thought to be the hardest hitter in the world. And
but she's not anymore.
She exposed her tonight.
She's not.
John McEnroe came in your studio and said, and it was, yeah, I found it quite a jarring quote, there are now 10 to 20 players who hit the ball as hard as Serena. I'm not sure whether that's quite true, but
there are a handful,
it's
for
definitely
sure.
Tonight, and when you think back 12 months ago to when Osaka did what she did, you start to realise actually the ground has shifted here.
Yes, that's how I feel about tonight. I feel like, look, I know I'm the first to take anything Patrick Mouratoglou says with a pinch of salt. Sat next to Meghan Markle tonight. That wasn't an accident, was it?
Nope.
But he said, before this match, he said, look, the other three Slam finals she played before, after coming back from maternity leave, she was able to make the finals through just willpower and competitive spirit, not because she was ready. This time she's ready, so we're looking at this purely in tennis terms, and I think that old adage of Serena's best tennis is the best tennis no longer applies. That's how I feel. I I still think she might get 24, maybe even more, because not everyone plays their best tennis at the same time. And on any given, you know,
yeah,
luck is a huge factor, etc., etc., draws, everything. But I don't think Serena's best tennis is the best tennis anymore. It's top five.
After tonight, I think I agree with you. And what struck me again, for everybody listening to this, you've watched this match in your own way with your own TV, or you've maybe listened to the radio, you've had your own commentators on it, which all influence, I think, the way you consume a match, the way you, and it does impact you. I've watched it from a real bird's eye view in the back of the stadium, looking down on the court. So it's difficult to get a sense of the trajectory of the ball and the height over the net, etc. But what we do get is a real sense of the movement of the players and where they are on the court and how they're reacting to the pace of the ball, how fast it's coming off the racket. And my sense, certainly for the set of commentary that I did, was that Serena was made to look, by Andreescu, a little slow. She was a step slower than her. And when they got into a big-hitting baseline rally, Andreescu was a match for her in terms of power. She had more work on the ball because she has that natural topspin, which makes it leap off the court away. But there were a number of times when they went side to side that Williams just wasn't quite there. And she was hitting the ball late. She was hitting it out, quite dramatically out, because she wouldn't back off and she kept still going for the shots. And maybe that's retrievable, maybe with a proper off-season and maybe some warm-up tournaments you can get some sharpness that will make you feel and make me feel, okay, actually that was a one-off. But it looked out there like a nearly 38-year-old, and let's remember that Serena turns 38 in a couple of weeks, against a 19-year-old. And that's a massive, massive difference in terms of your physicality. I'm not saying it's impossible to do it. Roger Federer still looks incredibly springy out there and like a panther. But Serena can sometimes move incredibly well. But to keep up with these kids, I don't know. I don't know whether that's going to be doable.
It's a different breed of kids, isn't it, to any that have come at her before.
She's different.
Yeah, she's different. And I think...
she's different to all the others.
This is... it's eroding her locker room aura, this. And Serena herself is the first to admit that that's a big weapon of hers, the intimidation factor. These fearless kids coming along, Sofia Kenin at the French Open.
Yeah.
But you know, doesn't have the game of Andreescu. No. These fearless kids coming along and standing in her face and going, yeah, I'm going to beat you. And succeeding. This is eroding a big weapon of Serena's.
Mm. And Andreescu, though, stands alone in terms of having everything.
Yeah,
I would say of this generation.
She stands apart.
She is the one that reminds me of Serena 20 years ago more than anybody.
And I asked for hands up in the Prime Video studio when it was me, John McEnroe, Daniela, and Greg, who had heard of her 12 months ago. And of course, Greg had his hand up before I'd even finished answering the question. But that's cheating, because he's Canadian. And he said, oh, the Canadian Federation tipped me off about this.
Formerly Canadian.
He has a Canadian passport.
Is he?
Okay. Yeah, he's got dual citizenship.
Okay.
He's always talking about his Canadian passport. It gets him access to all sorts of things over here that I can't get access to. He saw Lady Gaga's doctor the other day, apparently.
Awesome.
So he had the inside track from people at the Canadian Federation. So discounting that.
Yeah.
Danny, who is very recently retired, very much finger on the pulse of the women's tour, and John McEnroe, heavily involved in broadcasting, were happy to admit that they hadn't heard of her 12 months ago.
Yeah, and I mean, John was followed it up by saying, really, he only became aware of her properly at Indian Wells when she won that title. And I think probably quite a lot of people feel like that. I'm sure there are some of you out there who go, well, I knew all about her 2 years ago.
Early adopters.
Yeah. I saw her for the first time in Auckland at the start of the year in January, and I haven't looked up that WhatsApp exchange we had yet, because I'd quite like to have a look at it just to see how far away we were. But I would still say, even with Auckland, even with Indian Wells, and even with Toronto, what Andreescu's done here to carry all of that potential and that sort of, my word, she looks a bit special, into a slam and win a slam in pretty routine fashion. She has just won a slam, for the most part, without playing her best tennis. She played it in the final. She beat Serena Williams in straight sets.
On March the 3rd? No, hang on. What date is this?
It was before that, wasn't it? In old Auckland.
No, but I'm not sure I can go back that far. On the 6th of the 1st, you said... No, you didn't say anything then. I've searched Andreescu in my WhatsApp history. Can't find anything from January, but I can certainly tell you that on the 10th of March, you said, go watch Andreescu, absolutely brilliant.
Oh, I'm quite proud of myself. Because you were in Indian Wells, of course, weren't you?
Yes, yeah. So that would have been... So she hasn't lost a completed match since you said that.
Yeah, pretty cool.
She's 24-0, I think. Well, 25-0 now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, on the 13th of the 3rd, there was a message just saying Andreescu and then the eyes emoji. Who sent that? I sent that.
Hey.
Right, so 13th of March is when I can lay claim to her.
I would say you definitely had a bit of a Naomi Osaka moment when you saw her properly for the first time, didn't you?
Yeah.
Because you saw her way before me. She's amazing. And if you haven't had a chance to properly watch her play, just change it, because she's got the lot. And it does. I mean, McEnroe was saying she's going to win half a dozen major titles over the next few years. I mean, this is all fitness permitting, of course, because anybody who's had 4.5 months out of the game because of a shoulder injury is a worry in that regard. But
yes,
you know, hopefully that doesn't happen. And I just want to see her play some of these others. I want to see her play Anisimova. I want to see her play Sabalenka. I want to see her play Osaka.
Yeah, we haven't even seen her play most.
I want to see her play Coco Gauff. I want to see her play everybody.
But we stood with Tim Hemmer, didn't we, on the eve of this tournament, watching Bianca Andreescu practice. And you mentioned to Tim the timeout she'd had with the shoulder injury, and he said, "Okay, I'm going to have it." She was just about to start serving in the practice. He said, "Right, I'm going to." He said, usually that would be down to service motion. If you're having shoulder injuries as a 19-year-old, your first thought is issue with the service motion. And he instantly said, no, there's no problems there. So I put that to Mary a couple of days later when we were stood watching her practice. Spent a lot of time watching Bianca Andreescu practice. It's because of the dog.
It's also a lot of fun watching her practice.
She said, no, it's not. Yeah, it is, because of the dog.
I mean, but a lot goes on. I mean, she was wearing those multicoloured leggings, wasn't she? I know this is a minor point, but she just feels like this sort of person who just doesn't give a toss what anybody
magnetic.
Thinks. She just goes out there and she goes, in Simon's words, check me out. In my words, it'd be, look at me. I just don't give a toss. You can all judge me, couldn't give a toss.
Honestly, I look at her and I think... feel envious. I'd have as a 19-year-old, what I'd have given to have an ounce of that.
Yeah.
Really, I think
most
so
people,
great.
Most people are not, can't view life through that lens, and that's not. And I'm not being critical of her at all. She seems great to me. I mean, I think she seems great.
Well, as I said, look, I spoke to her on media day, and yeah, she was totally checked me out, but in the most respectful, likeable.
It's just openness, isn't it?
Yeah.
She just will engage
no
with us.
There's side to her at
as
all.
The media. I saw her listening to the questions in the post-match interview on court today. She just listened to the questions, and then she suddenly processed them and came out with an answer that wasn't just trotted out because she's yet so used to saying it.
Yeah. To finish the story that got initially derailed by dogs and latterly derailed by other things. Mary said it was just overplaying the shoulder injury,
right.
And just schedule management will sort that out.
Yeah.
So I really hope she's right.
Serena and 24. Probably the first time I've had a question mark in my mind.
Yeah, me too. I think she needs the luck to fall for her.
John McEnroe said in your interview with him, I don't think she'll be playing after next year.
Yeah.
Not sure what he was basing that on. I mean, look, and I'm not having a go because he said it with real stridency. He seemed happy to say that.
Yeah.
But, you know...
Well, I mean, I went far too early on it. Far too early. But I always said that I couldn't see her on tour without Venus. And Venus is 39.
Well, I mean, they're both going to play next year by the looks of things in the Olympics.
For sure. And so I know
three slams
Venus
worth,
is the first
it?
One to shut down the narrative about her age, etc., etc. They're both going to Tokyo. I think that once Tokyo is done, and therefore next season is done, Venus will be 40.
Mm.
But then equally, I just can't imagine her... I cannot imagine her retiring on 23. I can imagine her being out there as a 60-year-old, just asking for wild cards and trying.
I mean, I can't
well,
remember
how
who...
How will she ever have peace?
Well, I think John said, look, she's already the greatest ever. And whilst I do believe that, it'll always be there, won't it? That asterisk will always be there, even if it shouldn't be. And there are people listening to this, I know, that feel like... that shouldn't be considered because she's done it all in the open era, which I take the point of. But until she gets 25, we'll be having this conversation one way or another.
Can I interrupt this broadcast for an episode description from the podcast released on the 6th of January 2019?
Yes, you can.
The title is Goodbye Hopman Cup? Say It Ain't So. Andy Murray returns... semicolon. Naomi Osaka opens up, semicolon. Who are the Australian Open favourites? A couple of paragraphs about the Hopman Cup. Hopman Cup. Andy Murray, Brisbane, etc, etc. Doha, Djokovic, etc, etc. David and Catherine assess the title winning weeks for Kevin Anderson and Aryna Sabalenka, not aged well. There's also discussion about Naomi Osaka, blah, 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 and, comma, and excitement over rising star Bianca Andreescu.
I'll claim that. Early adopter law.
6th of January 2019.
Awesome.
Happy birthday, David.
Yeah, come on, law. Well, never in a million years could I ever imagine this. It is one of the most stunning rises at such a speed. Four Grand Slam tournaments is all she's played in the main draw. That equals Monica Seles at the age of 16, I should add, there with her. It's just... And yet, still, just looking at her, it doesn't feel that big a surprise. That's the most surprising thing about it, is that it doesn't feel that big of a surprise.
Yeah, I think I used that line on air when she reached the final. Is this a surprise that's not a surprise to anyone?
Yeah. I'm still almost saying that I think Serena will hit 24 out of just sort of loyalty, as much as anything. And look,
well,
she's still
and
a brilliant
Mary
player.
Mary saying always pick Serena.
And she's all, look, know, she still has reached four of what, the last five Grand Slam finals. Mm. So, you know, that's an incredible amount of consistency, and she keeps giving herself opportunities to this age at least. So I'm gonna stick with it, but Andreescu has just put my jaw on the floor.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Mixed doubles. was won by Bethany Mattock-Sands and Jamie Murray today. It's their second one in a row. I think the first time anybody's defended it for about 30-odd years, isn't it?
Since 1982.
Wow. Fantastic.
And Jamie's actually won the title 3 years in a row because he won it with Martina Hingis 2 years ago.
Yeah, brilliant.
A US Open mixed doubles specialist.
They won the title and didn't actually, Bethany Mattock-Sands didn't actually know she'd won it, did she?
And she was really annoyed about that because she, I love how open she was about this. They both came to the Prime Studio, really lovely interview with them. And she was really annoyed about that because it meant that the sort of visuals, the optics, as people say, of her winning moment were rubbish.
Yeah, she was very...
She said, oh, last year there were all these great photos of me jumping in the air, and this year there was just a photo of me looking confused.
She thought it was 3-2.
Yeah.
And she just won the whole thing. And Jamie actually said that the same thing had happened to him the other way around earlier in the doubles, didn't he? He said he went to Neil Skupski thinking that they'd just lost. Oh, you know, good match, mate. And Neil said, come on, keep going. Yeah. So, you know, this is... It shows how the mind frazzles, really, in these situations. It's hardly surprising when you consider what the stress they're under and the intensity of it all. But congratulations to Bethany Mattock-Sands and Jamie Murray. I mean, Bethany always gives a fantastic interview.
She's... Oh, she is energy, yeah. Isn't she? Again, if I could have just an ounce of that... Please.
Come
yeah,
on.
She's you, dynamite.
She does herself down.
She's an energy source.
She's just presented 8.5 hours a day on live TV for the last 2 weeks. She's talking about energy. She's done a fantastic
That's
job.
That's where it all goes, though.
Well,
you see the bad bits.
No. Well, the podcast is another good half an hour every day. That's fine. Just a word as well. I mentioned on the podcast last night about Cabal and Farah and their win. How cool was that atmosphere? When doubles really gets people engaged, and obviously that was a huge Colombian crowd as well. It's fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah, it was really special in there, wasn't it? I think their Wimbledon win has captured people. Obviously in Colombia. And everything about that story, how long they were a partnership before winning their first Grand Slam, the fact that it came at Wimbledon, the nature in which they did it over Roger Vassalamou at Wimbledon, and now, after achieving that, rather than having this sort of letdown a lot of people have, they're riding this incredible wave of emotion and momentum, and there's something really epic and orchestral about Juan Sebastian Cabal, Robert Farah at the moment, and I think it's Farah that has a great dog,
and one of them certainly had a little toddler
one
on
of them
court,
has a nice child, and one of them has a great dog. It could be the same one that's just got a great team around him.
Lovely scenes anyway, so congratulations
really
to them.
It was really sweet.
The men's singles final tomorrow. Having seen Andreescu today, I think we're in for something special tomorrow.
Yeah.
I think Daniil Medvedev is coming up to make up
big.
The numbers here. He's another one. He's just going to walk in there and... Come on, then.
Yeah, and so many people have all these physical question marks over Medvedev, and I think he's hoodwinked everyone.
McEnroe loved him, didn't he? In the studio.
Yeah, his eyes lit up.
There was this brilliant moment where he said, you know, he said, I already liked him. I like the way he kind of puts people off balance and sort of fades these shots away. And he said, you know, but he came in and he was probably this sort of guy that nobody really knew and they'd never heard of him. And then suddenly now he's like this guy that's like, hey, is that the guy who said, screw you, to the crowd? Is that him?
Yeah, I was getting the wrap-up in my ear, so I was gently trying to move John along so I could get him off to his, you know, next broadcasting appointment, whatever that was. And suddenly he's gone off on a tangent about Trump and Putin and saying, screw you. Live television, ladies and gentlemen.
In the company of children, dogs and John McEnroe. You never know what's going to happen next. Well,
John, I'm trying to get you out of here. You're talking about Putin and Trump.
It's all coming up tomorrow, 9 o'clock UK time, 4 o'clock in the US. You'll be on air at what time?
Well, we're on air for the women's doubles final, which is Barty and Azarenka against Sabalenka and Mertens.
Yeah,
absolute cracker. We're on air for that at 6 p.m.
Okay.
UK time, and then build up to the men's final will start at 8:30 with the final at 9.
And then a tennis podcast to follow, because it will be our final one, folks. I hope you're enjoying them. We are. We're having a great time. We're sitting out here in the food court, surrounded by closing food stalls, and unfortunately the provider of my froze debut has closed for the night, although frankly I only need the one because I can barely stand up as it is.
Kim Crawford, if you want to, whoever you are, if you want to sponsor this podcast,
we're just fine. We're all over your product. So we're going to be back with another one of these tomorrow. We are brought to you in association with The Telegraph, executive produced by tennisballs.com. Our mascot is Rio with a Y.
Could I mention something very quickly?
Sure.
A very nice looking man came up to me earlier and asked if I was Catherine. I was on the phone to my producer back in London. I mean, this story is already making me sound like an absolute TV person. I was on the phone, I was trying to have a WhatsApp phone call over very dodgy Wi-Fi at the time, and he was so lovely and so excited to meet a tennis podcast presenter. I'm sure I'd have been equally excited if it were you.
That's
and
it.
I ended up having a photo taken with him while I was holding my phone to my ear, and I haven't stopped cringing about the fact that I did that ever since, and I'm sorry for myself that photo now exists in the world of me on the phone, and I'm sorry to you, whoever you are, that I wasn't my better self in that moment.
Aww.
But thank you for listening, and thank you for your support.
Yeah, and thank you to everybody for their support. We've had some really lovely messages, both on Twitter at Tennis Podcast, on Instagram, via email. You can email us through tennispodcast.net. We've got our contact form on there. You can sign up to our newsletter for one more day of daily predictions. I got it right today. I'm flying. It's great.
Did you say Andreescu in two?
Yeah.
That's annoying.
It's great being smug, isn't it? Although, as my wife said, the only reason I chose that is because you'd already gone for three, and Matt had gone for three for Serena, which is true. And if you want to write to us or any of that stuff, or join the newsletter gang, you can do that. Just scroll down on the show notes of your phone there, and you can click on those things and sign up. If you like this show as well and you want to support us when we crowdfund our 2020 campaign, you can ask for a reminder. You can sign up for a reminder on December the 1st when we launch. Our goal will be to send Matt everywhere and to make as many of these shows as we possibly can, and hopefully as good as we possibly can, so that you all enjoy them, and we can carry this on. We're really enjoying it. We're loving it. And we will speak to you tomorrow with another tennis podcast following the men's singles final. See you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.